Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I learned some lessons that I learned from dealing with the media for Fat Studies Reflective Intersections 2012. I chat with Margita Christiansen about the great book Lessons from the Fatosphere, and I spotlight a blog from the Fat Heffalump that addresses the new Nike ad with 12-year-old Nathan trying desperately to be great through weight loss. Last week, I shared some of my tips and tricks from hosting an academic conference after having successfully hosted Fat Studies Reflective Intersections 2012 in Wellington a month ago. I thought this week I would actually chat about something specific that I dealt with a lot with the conference, which was the media. Having hosted the first New Zealand Fat Studies conference in Wellington, I've had the pleasure of working with a variety of print, radio, and TV media. I've worked with the media before, mind you, doing spots on Close Up to discuss issues of discrimination against fat people, chatting with Jim Mora on Radio New Zealand about the emerging discipline of fat studies, and speaking on TV and Zed's Breakfast about whether size should be a protected class in New Zealand. I also spent almost a year working with an amazing team from TVNZ's 2020 to produce a piece about my work as a fat activist. So it's safe to say that I felt relatively comfortable engaging with various forms of media, and I was excited that our conference might attract some attention. Let me pause while I consider that sentence. Some attention. What resulted from the Massey University press release and subsequent Dominion Post cover story was a deluge of media requests from print, radio, and TV. From New Zealand, Australia, Asia, France, the United States, the UK, it was overwhelming, and I was in no way prepared to handle so many demands. So here's what I did learn. First up, do an exclusive for the on-site media. Allow only one print, one radio, and one TV media to attend the actual conference on-site. Be very clear as to when they are allowed to attend, and prearrange this with your speakers before you even set the program schedule. If I could recommend one of the media outlets, mine would be Neil Sands, correspondent for the AFP. You can reach him, by the way, at neil.sands@afp.com. Of all the coverage we received, his piece was my favorite. Even with a skeptic, the piece kept the focus on the conference. Plus, being an AP reporter, his was the piece that was most often picked up by news agencies around the world. And best of all, there were no headless fatties in his story. Challenge their insistence on having a skeptic in the piece. Remind them that in 99.99% of the news coverage on obesity and the obesity epidemic, they never have a skeptic. So why do they feel the need to have a skeptic on this story? Have multiple people available for media requests and a single person who is not running the conference in charge of fielding those requests. Make sure everyone has the same talking points and try to get as many different people on as many different requests as possible. Make a condition of any press and media access, no headless fatties in their representation. Refer them to the Stocky Bodies image library if they feel that they have nowhere else to turn but the classic headless fatty. And ensure that those engaging with the media are able to bring questions back around to the conference. Otherwise, the story shifts from being Fat Studies Conference to Fat Pride and Crazy Fat Woman Claims Fat is Not the Worst Thing Ever. And lastly, appreciate that they're going to get some things wrong. Quite often, many news outlets reported that New Zealand is the third fattest country in the world, which is factually untrue. They also got other small things wrong. Some of them aged me 6 years. I think I look pretty good for 39, if I don't say so myself. And some of the other small mistakes were quite interesting. In the AFP reports that did go around the world, my weight was reported as 135 kilos, but then miscalculated into being 237 pounds. 135 kilos is about 300 pounds, which last time I weighed is what I weighed. Unfortunately, some of the continental presses didn't report both the kilos and the pounds, just the pounds. In many ways, I'm happy with the ways I dealt with the media. In some ways, I know that I failed. And in all ways, I've learned a lot and I will strive to do better next time. Joining Joining me is Margita Christiansen, a fat activist and PhD student at the University of California, San Diego. Margita, thank you so much for coming back to Friend of Maryland.
Thank you so much for having me again. This is great.
So today what I thought we would chat about is representations of fat bodies. So I'm sure this is true in the States, but here in New Zealand, there are several programs currently running that are negative representations of fat bodies. So whether it's The Biggest Loser of the U.S., The Biggest Loser of the U.K., Extreme Home Makeover Weight Loss Edition. We also get a delightful and sarcastic air quote, of course, show from the U.K. called The Big Fat Family Challenge.
Okay.
So we are inundated with these negative, these highly negative representations of fat bodies in mainstream culture. So I was hoping you and I could actually talk about maybe some positive representations of fat bodies. If they're out there. I think they're out there. Yeah. I hope they're out there.
They're definitely out there. Sometimes you have to look really hard. Sometimes you have to, like, bypass a lot of bullshit just to get to a little glimmer of hope
right.
in a, you know, popular culture artifact or whatever, a TV show or whatever. It's out there, and I'd like to think that it's getting, we're having increasingly fat positive representations. I think that show, Huge, that was out for a while. I don't know if you got it in New Zealand.
We did not, no.
Do you know about it?
I do. That's the one with Nikki Blonsky, right?
Yes, yes. And they're at the fat camp, yes.
Yeah, most of what I know about that, to be honest, is from listening to Two Whole Cakes, because they quite often on their podcast would talk about the latest episode. So
Yes. And sadly, it only was like half a season or something, and then they canceled it. Even then, that show definitely had its problems as far as portrayal of fat characters, but it also had like a million different characters, and they were all super nuanced, and like it was great. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk about.
Okay.
although I do love that show. So I guess what I'd like to talk about isn't so much like a TV show or a movie or anything like that. It's a book that probably most people in the fat activist group have read, but it's still very important to me. It's called Lessons from the Fatosphere. Quit Dieting and Declare a Truce with Your Body. It's by Kate Harding and Marianne Kirby. I know over there it was called something else. I can't remember now what it is. But you can find it by Googling it. It's a wonderful book, and I love it.
Great book.
Kate Harding and Marianne Kirby are two amazing bloggers and fat activists who put together just this like really great fat and body acceptance 101 type book. It's very clear and concise. I read it in one afternoon, and you know, honestly, I was already in grad school to do fat studies when I read this book, and it still totally changed my life. Like, I was already on the path towards, you know, fat acceptance and body positivity and whatever, and I thought I had kind of been doing a good job for a while, but reading this book really just kind of drove it home for me how important body acceptance really is. And it has some really great tips for getting there if you're not quite there yet. So now when I'm talking to pretty much anybody, if they are even just a little bit interested in what I have to say, I say, you know, you need to buy this book. You need, you know, whether you're fat or thin or somewhere in between, this book is really, really important, and I think will give you a pretty good idea of the kind of work that a lot of us doing fat activism are trying to do.
One of the things that I love about that book so much is how user-friendly it is. And I mean, like you mentioned, it's got concrete tips and tricks for little steps that people can take depending on where they are in their own journey of accepting their own bodies and throwing off the self-loathing that often accompanies having a fat body in our current anti-fat culture. And I do. I appreciate that it's very user-friendly, because I'm aware that as an academic, there's actually quite a lot that's been written about fat liberation, fat acceptance, those types of things from a very theoretical or empirical place. And that's not something that's really that accessible to everybody.
Right.
So I like that.
Yeah, I definitely feel like with the study stuff especially, like, you kind of have to already have, like, basic 101 knowledge of the movement and of, you know, what it really means. And I think that this book is actually kind of like that good stepping stone to get people ready to kind of think more critically about bodies and bodily norms and that kind of thing. But you're right, it has some really great, easy to understand tips, especially this, my favorite part of the whole book, and one that I loved it because it was definitely very true for me. And part four of the book is called Avoiding Negativity, and it has several chapters in it, including don't hang around with people who say negative things about your body, and don't hang around with people who say negative things about their own body.
Which you would think would be so basic, like, duh.
Yeah,
but at the same time,
because
it's so normative to hear people talk bad about their own
bodies and other
people's bodies.
Yeah, you get into a room of, like, teenage girls, for example, and it's like the body negativity talk, like, does not stop. And it's so creepy and gross to me because it's actually a way that we are, as women, are taught to socialize with each other.
Right.
So it's how we bond. We bond over hating our bodies. And, you know, I think another thing that's really driven home for everybody, not just young girls, is, like, this idea that it's natural to judge people.
Right.
And it's natural to put people in different categories and to want to be negatively judging people, I think, is something that we are kind of taught is really normal and natural or whatever. And so, like, I mean, when I was struggling with my own body image, I know that I would be walking down the street and I personally would be having very negative thoughts about other people that I saw. Like, I would see, you know, someone who was fatter than me or differently shaped than me, and I'd be like, well, at least I'm not that fat, or at least I'm not shaped like that, even though I'm fat and ugly and all these other horrible things that I thought about myself. And that kind of thinking is just so poisonous, and it really doesn't, you know, the worst part about that kind of thinking, I think, is that because I knew I was thinking negative thoughts about other people, I was so sure that everybody else around me was thinking negative things about me. And that stopped me from doing a lot of things. It stopped me from being as social as I wanted to be. It stopped me from, you know, from just approaching people who I maybe wanted to be friends with or something. Because I'm like, what if they don't want to be friends with the fat girl? And almost all of that kind of came from my own, like, really poisonous, like, negative thoughts that I had about my own body and other people's bodies. And I really made an effort to stop thinking negatively about other people. I even at one point started this thing where every single person I passed on the street and noticed, I would purposely think of a positive thing about them. Like, I really like their shoes, or her hair looks really great today, or something like that. And it honestly was so instrumental in my own acceptance of my own body, because I was no longer thinking, when I could see the beauty and positivity in other people's bodies, I could really start to shine that light on myself and start thinking good things about myself. And I would see women who are my size or fatter, and I would be like, God, she's gorgeous, or that outfit is amazing. And then I was like, wait a minute, I can apply that to myself now. So, I mean, I think that is just one of the absolutely most imperative things when it comes to starting to really try to accept yourself, is to stop thinking those negative thoughts and to stop surrounding yourself with other people who are negative. It's just, like I said, it's, like, really poisonous, and it's so easy to fall back into that trap of being judgmental of other people, and I think just being judgmental in general, like, it's not so great. It's so much better to be, like, open to all sorts of people who are different from you, and to just be, like, kind of just, like, loving, you know, instead of not loving. I think that we're all better off if we are open to others instead of closed off and thinking horrible thoughts about them and that kind of thing.
It's a powerful form of activism to embrace and be positive about your body and to mm-hmm. allow yourself and encourage yourself to embrace and be positive about other people's bodies as well. Because as you mm-hmm. said, for many of us, we are taught from a very young age to judge people's bodies and to associate mm-hmm. Moral and personal and personality characteristics with certain body types.
Yeah.
And simply sure. being aware of the internal narrative you have in your mind and going, mm-hmm. wow, it really is negative. I see someone I don't know or even someone I do at work and I have a negative thought about their appearance, whether it's passing judgment on what they look like, what they're wearing, their behaviors, mm-hmm. and then to be aware of the internal self-talk you have about yourself. So
yeah,
it really is powerful totally. To suggest that people be positive and be mm-hmm. friendly to both other people's bodies and, of course, their own as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like this easy switch that you just turn on and suddenly you're positive all the time. I think that's really important, actually, for people to know, because I think sometimes people will fall into this trap of, like, having a negative thought about themselves or someone else and then immediately being ashamed because they feel like they're being a bad activist or something, or they're not ready for fat acceptance, or they're not good enough or something. And I think it's actually really important for us to talk about how, you know, even those of us who've been doing this for a really long time, like, we still sometimes suffer from negative thoughts. Like, we still live in this fucked up world that says, like, we are not worthy. And just because we know better now, it doesn't mean that we don't sometimes succumb to those negative thoughts again. But when you've been practicing body positivity for long enough, like, you have the tools necessary to combat those thoughts, to understand where they're coming from and why you're feeling that way, instead of falling back into that spiral of, like, self-loathing and that kind of thing, you know?
Absolutely. And, of course, with any, you know, if we think about, okay, I'm 32, so if mm-hmm. I consider that for the first 27, 28 years of my life, I was relatively body negative, both about other people and about myself. Although I did experience some ambivalence about my own body because I thought I was pretty awesome. And, you know, other people, of course, would remind me that, no, you weren't because you're fat. But,
right.
you know, if I think, okay, you know, for the first 27 years of my life, I was, you know, relatively negative about my body and other people's bodies. So it's probably going to take me another 27 years.
Yeah.
If not longer, before my automatic response is body positive.
Right. Definitely. And even if 9 times out of 10 your automatic response is body positive, you know, there will be every once in a while just, like, that really hideous thought. But again, like I said, like, because you've been working on it, it doesn't, like, you know, it doesn't totally ruin your day.
Right.
You can work through it, and you can think critically about why it is that you had that thought or you're feeling that feeling or, you know, what have you. So I'm really, really thankful to Fat Acceptance and body positive activism and Lessons from the Fatosphere, especially, for, like, really driving that message home to me.
Well, and I think we can kind of end this by just suggesting to those people listening that if they haven't picked up Lessons from the Fatosphere, that it would be an excellent book to purchase.
Yes,
a good investment.
Absolutely. It's a really good investment. I've now lent my copy out to several friends and family members. I'm actually getting ready to put it in a little package to send to a friend up in LA. So
you're very brave to lend out a book that you love. I'm always a bit hesitant to do that.
I know. But I also, you know, my hope is that they'll like it so much that then they'll go out and buy it for themselves.
Yes.
And then if they happen to want to keep it forever and don't give it back to me, I'm okay with that, because I feel like, you know, it's probably they really needed it, and I will go buy another copy.
Excellent. Well, Margita, thank you so much for coming on today and talking to us about this book that made such an impact in your life and many other people's lives as well, I'm sure.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me again.
Okay.
I really, really enjoyed talking about this book.
Bye.
Bye.
Spotlight today is a piece titled, Does a Bear Shit in the Woods? This was published on the Fat Heffalump, written by the fabulous Kath Reed. Quote, in Time Healthland this week, journalist Bonnie Roachman asks, does Nike's greatness ad exploit fat people? As you may be able to guess by the title of this blog post, I think the answer just might be yes. But not only does it exploit fat people, it further stigmatizes us, as does Ms. Roachman in the way she writes her article. So first, go off and find the ad. So this ad uses a 12-year-old fat boy, Nathan Sorrell, and Nike had him run behind a Porsche. On the second take, he threw up in a ditch. In the boy's own words, we'll try to work with you, Sorrell said, quoting the director. They were lenient with me. As though Nike were doing this boy a huge favor, and that they were generous by allowing the boy the time to recover from being sick. The advert goes on about greatness, how anyone is capable of it, all of us, even the poor fatties. All the while focusing on a fat, sweaty boy running slowly towards the camera. Even Ms. Roachman in her piece uses words like lumbering and bulk to describe Nathan, words that suggest he is somehow ungainly, unattractive, and even pathetic. The implication of this advert, and even the article, is that we should cheer on the poor fat kid because he's working hard to lose weight, even if it is a bit pathetic. This, friends, is not an ad that is designed to celebrate fat people being active. This ad is telling us, well, at least you'll be better than this sorry fat kid. Even Rebecca Puhl from Yale's Rudd Center, quoted in the article, misses the point. She refers to this advert as featuring an overweight boy in their ad and doing so in a respectful manner. How is this respectful? How is it respectful to have a 12-year-old boy run repeatedly behind a Porsche until he vomits? How respectful is it to show a fat person struggling and sweaty, even looking like he is unwell and in pain, which we know he was, and adding hushed tones about how anyone can be great, with the implication that even this pathetic fat kid. And let's not get started on the fact that they use a 12-year-old child for this rather than an adult. Also note, they've used a fat boy who is trying to lose weight, who is running because he doesn't want to be fat anymore. Nike are even dangling the carrot of perhaps returning if he is quote-unquote successful at doing so. How is this not stigmatizing towards fat people? There is nothing celebratory about this ad. The ad isn't celebrating Nathan. It's just saying that he has the potential for greatness if he loses weight. In fact, this ad is saying, keep running, fatty, until you're not fat. If Nike or anyone else wanted to feature a fat person and do so in a respectful manner, they wouldn't be using weight loss as a greatness metaphor. They wouldn't be using some poor kid who clearly is only running because he thinks he has to be thin. They wouldn't be featuring a struggling 12-year-old boy who looks like the unhappiest kid in the world. If they wanted to feature a fat person and do so in a respectful manner, which would be absolutely radical advertising, they would perhaps feature some fat people being active, running, playing sport, dancing, etc., in their Nike shoes and having a great time. They'd show fatties laughing and having fun. They'd show positive representation of fatties engaging in physical activity, not having some poor kid run behind a Porsche until he vomits. Now, I'm not expecting people to look pretty when they are physically active. It's hard work and it's sweaty. But instead of going on about how anyone has the potential to be great, which implies young Nathan only has the potential, he has to lose weight first, he isn't great yet. How about having some fats talk about how running makes them feel good? Or how they love getting better and better at whatever sport they do by practicing hard? Or how working up a sweat makes them feel strong and alive? Instead, we are sold this lie that to achieve greatness, we must be working hard to shed the pounds, to reduce our fat bodies. Fat people are not required to engage in physical activity to get a pass in society, nor are we only allowed to be fat if we are trying desperately not to be fat. We are not potentially worthy unless we're potentially thin. Not to mention that health is not of moral value. Nobody has an obligation to be healthy, whatever that is. Running behind a Porsche until you puke is not healthy by my standards, that's for sure. Want to see some representations of fat people engaging in physical activity that are respectful, positive, and non-exploitive? Check out the pictures in Stocky Bodies, people stretching, swimming, even me on my bike. That's how you feature fat people engaging in physical activity in a respectful manner. Not by focusing on their lumbering bulk, talking about how they have the potential to be great because they're trying to lose weight. And certainly not by using a child who is very clearly unhappy about his body and is willing to run behind a Porsche until he is sick and call it leniency on behalf of the director, end quote. Closing the show is Alanna Bridgewater with Be There.
And how the love we shared just didn't last. I hope you're enjoying life, doing things your way. You can call me anytime, any hour of the day. And I want you to know that I will always care. And I want you to know that I will always be there. I saw your face and I turned to walk away. You tried to stop me, but there was nothing left to say. Now I see the memories of you everywhere that I go. I need you to know this one thing before I let you go. And I want you to know that I will always care. And I want you to know that I will always be there. And I want you to know that I will always care. And I want you to know I will always be there.